Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr. and Anne Ball. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
Hundreds of thousands of families in California are being affected by wildfires in the state, and as many as 1.5 million people may lose electrical power. The company Pacific Gas and Electric called for another blackout early Tuesday in 29 Northern California counties. An earlier power outage that started Saturday affected 2.5 million people, the Associated Press reported. PG&E is the nation's biggest utility company, but it has been severely criticized for the last 2 years over the part it has played in fires in the state and how it has provided electricity during those times. Some Californians are unhappy with the company's decision to cut electricity. Janet Luoma of Santa Rosa told the Associated Press, "It's so obvious. It's just to protect them from more liability." California Governor Gavin Newsom has grown accustomed to fires. "What's interesting about the fires at this moment is that it's rather normal," he told reporters Monday. "What's not normal is the power shutoffs," he added. The fires have affected or destroyed many homes across the state. They have even affected people who live in costly neighborhoods in Southern California. NBA basketball superstar LeBron James was forced to leave the area where he and his family live and tweeted about it on Sunday. "Man, these LA fires aren't no joke. Had to emergency evacuate my house, and I've been driving around with my family trying to get rooms. No luck so far." In Northern California, schools are closed in some areas, while others do not have power. Stores in Oakland, near San Francisco, are using generators. And many people use their cars to charge their electronic devices. The fire is affecting areas in both the northern and southern parts of the nation's second-largest state by land area. In the north, the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection says the Kincade Fire is affecting more than 30,000 hectares in Sonoma County. The fire has been burning for 5 days and is only 15% contained. Sonoma County is famous for wine growing. The AP reported that 96 buildings were destroyed in the county as of Tuesday, but it is only one of the fires in the area. In Southern California, one of the fires has destroyed homes near the Getty Museum, which holds a major art collection and library. However, while 8 homes nearby were burned, The museum is in better condition than other structures. It is made of stone and has a huge water storage tank. Strong winds are feeding the fires and spreading them quickly. Weather experts on Tuesday said they expected strong winds in the north with little chance of rain. Scotty Richardson spoke to AP about his experience. He lost power on Saturday. He said the possibility that electricity will not be restored for days makes him furious. Furious. Last week, PG&E admitted that its equipment might have been the cause of fires in some areas. I'm Mario Ritter Jr.
The New Mexico High Desert is known for its beauty. The area enjoys sunny skies and even snow in winter. One thing missing has been teachers. The Aztec Municipal School District serves about 3,000 students in northwestern New Mexico. But for nearly 8 years, the school district had trouble finding full-time teachers for its special education students. It instead used temporary or substitute teachers to work with children who have physical disabilities or difficulty learning. Tanya Prokop is Aztec's deputy superintendent. She tells VOA Americans were not interested in the full-time positions. Aztec is not alone. In 2018, New Mexico State University reported that the state had 740 unfilled teaching positions in public schools. A study from the Learning Policy Institute estimates that nationwide, public school districts currently have a shortage of 112,000 teachers.
This year, through a program that brings foreigners to teach in U.S. schools, Aztec has 8 full-time special education teachers. All of them are Filipinos with J-1 visas from the U.S. State Department. They teach some of the children who attend the district's 6 schools. Aztec's Filipino teachers are trained specialists in their areas of expertise. They come to teach for 3 years, and the visa can be extended for up to 5 years. The J-1 visa, however, does not lead to a green card or permanent residency in the United States. Prokop gives high marks to the Filipino teachers, saying it has been a wonderful experience. Not all of it has been easy.
Both the Filipino teachers and the American students have to get used to the differences in their cultures. Prokop says managing the classroom is one of the biggest things the teachers have had to learn. Learning in the classroom is not just limited to reading books and doing homework. Prokop said that many of the students have never traveled far from home.
So to have somebody come from a whole different country across an ocean and share those experiences and share pictures and share stories and share food And we're coming up to some holidays, so they'll be sharing some different experiences with holidays.
Procop said the community welcomed the 8 Filipino teachers and helped them settle into their new homes. Riva Alapan is one of the 8. She teaches mathematics, integrated algebra, at Aztec High School with another teacher. Working in America is a dream of every Filipino teacher, she told VOA. She said she believes America provides an excellent chance for them to improve their teaching. Coming to teach here in America, she said she needed a lot of guts. In other words, one must be brave. Alapan also said it was risky because New Mexico is so far away from her homeland.
She also was concerned about discrimination. There has been news in my country that Filipino teachers have been taken for granted, not by the school admin, but by the students, she said. That students have bullied teachers for being a non-native English speaker. Filipinos are discriminated because of our accent, meaning the way they talk. But she said that my experience in Aztec High School proves it wrong. She says the students are kind and respectful. Some things the Filipino teachers will need to get used to, the food and weather. Americans eat different foods. In addition, New Mexico has very different weather from the Philippines. The 8 teachers are excited about winter, since it will be their first snow.
Alapan found her job through a business called Biposh International, LLC. Cheryl Marie Magany is co-owner of the company. She left the Philippines and moved to the United States over 10 years ago to accept a job as a teacher. In 2016, she launched her company to help other Filipino teachers find work. This year, she helped place teachers in schools across the country, from Florida to Montana and Colorado. Biposh is based in Farmington, New Mexico, where Magany was a high school teacher. She told VOA almost 1,000 teachers a year contact the company. Of that number, 100 to 200 find jobs in U.S. schools. Magany works with the teachers before they start in their new positions. She said it is not easy for them when they first arrive. But she adds that the foreign teacher program increases understanding between people from different countries.
I see the benefits, and I see the beauty in diversity, you know, with different people come together and learn together different practices and also knowledge about each other's culture. It's really nice.
The U.S. State Department says 3,252 foreign teachers were given exchange visas in 2018. The countries sending the most teachers were the Philippines, Spain, Jamaica, China, and France. The top 5 states with the most foreign teachers were North and South Carolina, New Mexico, Texas, and California.
I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Ann Ball.
Thank you. From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation, our weekly program of American history for people learning American English. I'm Steve Ember in Washington. James K. Polk moved into the White House after his swearing in as the nation's 11th president on March 4, 1845. Polk told voters during the election campaign he would serve only one term as president. During those 4 years, he wanted to achieve or reach four main goals. Two of his goals related to money. Polk wanted to reduce taxes on imports and to establish an independent treasury. His other goals related to expanding the country to the Pacific Ocean. President Polk wanted to secure the Oregon Territory and California for the United States. Those who supported the president shared Polk's belief that the United States should extend from sea to sea, from the Atlantic to the Pacific. They felt it was God's will and their duty to spread American democracy and freedom across the continent. In the words of poet Walt Whitman, "It is for the interest of mankind that America's power and territory should be extended. The farther, the better." One way Americans wanted to extend the country was by making the Oregon Territory part of the United States. The territory included what are now the U.S. states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, as well as part of the Canadian province of British Columbia. American traders established claims to the Oregon Territory early in the country's history. But British explorers gave Britain claims to the same territory. The two countries could not agree on how to divide Oregon between them. Since few white settlers lived in Oregon, Britain and the United States agreed to occupy the area jointly. This joint occupation worked well until the 1840s. Then, thousands of Americans began moving west to Oregon. The new settlers wanted all of Oregon to belong to the United States. President Polk agreed. He thought the United States had strong claims to the entire territory, but he said he would compromise. He offered to divide Oregon at the 49th parallel of latitude. Everything north of this line would belong to Britain. Everything south of it, including the Columbia River, would belong to the United States. Britain's minister in Washington rejected the offer. He said Britain would accept nothing but the Columbia River as the southern border of British Oregon. President Polk said America had no choice then but to claim all of Oregon. He seemed to say the United States would fight, if necessary, to defend its claim. Polk did not really want war, but he thought he needed a strong position to negotiate with Britain. In London, the British government decided Oregon was not worth a war with the United States. After all, Britain had moved its trading center on the Columbia River north to Vancouver Island, so there was no real reason to demand rights to the use of the river. The British foreign minister proposed a treaty that would divide the territory at the 49th parallel of latitude. The proposal was almost the same that President Polk had made earlier. The United States accepted the proposal. The treaty made the 49th parallel the U.S. border from the Rocky Mountains to the Pacific Ocean. South of this was California. An American government minister once described California as the richest, the most beautiful, and the healthiest country in the world. The official said the port of San Francisco was big enough to hold all the navies of the world. He said someday San Francisco would control the trade of all the Pacific Ocean. There was only one problem.
It was owned by Mexico.
Historian Robert Mary wrote a book about James K. Polk. Mr. Mary says Polk wanted to bring California into the Union anyway.
So obviously he had some underlying ideas about how that might be done.
At first, the United States attempted to buy California from the Mexican government. But Mexican officials refused even to talk about selling California to the United States. When the U.S. Congress approved statehood for Texas in early 1845, Mexico broke relations with the United States altogether. President Polk ordered the commander of the U.S. Army in Texas, Zachary Taylor, to move his forces into the disputed area near the Rio Grande River. The river formed part of the border between Texas and Mexico. Polk sent a representative to Mexico in an effort to reestablish diplomatic relations. But the Mexican government refused to talk with the diplomat. General Taylor sent one of his officers across the Rio Grande to meet with Mexican officials. The Mexicans protested. They said the area across the river was Mexican territory. The movement of American troops there, they said, was an act of war. For almost a month, the Americans and the Mexicans kept their positions. Then, on April 25, 1846, General Taylor received word that a large Mexican force had crossed the border a few kilometers up the river. A small force of American soldiers went to investigate. They were attacked. All of the Americans were killed, wounded, or captured. General Taylor quickly sent a message to President Polk in Washington. It said war had begun. Taylor's message arrived at the White House on May 9th. A few days later, the president asked Congress to give him everything he needed to win the war and bring peace to the area. Some members of Congress did not want to declare war against Mexico. They believed the United States was responsible for the situation along the Rio Grande. They were outvoted. Later, Polk wrote, "We had not gone to war for conquest, but it was clear that in making peace, we would, if possible, get California and other parts of Mexico." Many Americans opposed what they called Mr. Polk's war. Whig Party members and anti-slavery abolitionists in northern states believed that slave owners and Southerners in Polk's administration had planned the war. They believed the South wanted to win Mexican territory for the purpose of spreading and strengthening slavery. The president was troubled by this opposition, but he did not think the war would last long. He thought the United States could quickly force Mexico to sell him the territory he wanted. So Polk secretly sent a representative to the former Mexican dictator, Antonio López de Santa Anna. Santa Anna was living in exile in Cuba. The representative said the United States wanted to buy California and some other Mexican territory. Santa Anna said he would agree to the sale if the United States would help him return to power. President Polk accepted the deal. He ordered the United States Navy to let the former dictator sail to the Mexican port of Veracruz. But once Santa Anna returned, he failed to honor his promises. He refused to end the war and sell California. Instead, Santa Anna organized an army to fight the United States. In 4 months, he built an army of 20,000 men. When General Taylor learned that Santa Anna was preparing to attack, he moved his forces to fight the Mexicans. Santa Anna sent a representative to meet with General Taylor. The representative said the Americans had 1 hour to surrender. Taylor's answer to Santa Anna was short. Tell him to go to hell. The battle between the United States and Santa Anna's army lasted 2 days. Losses were heavy on both sides. On the second night, the Mexican forces withdrew from the battlefield. Taylor had won. The victory strengthened Taylor's public image. He had already won the Battle of Monterrey, a major trading and transportation center in northeast Mexico. Other American forces also were victorious. General Winfield Scott captured the port of Veracruz and was ready to attack Mexico City. Commodore Robert Stockton invaded California and had raised the American flag over the territory. Stephen Kearny seized Santa Fe, the capital of New Mexico, without firing a shot. Still, the war was not over. President Polk's short war already had lasted for more than a year. Polk decided to send a special diplomatic representative to Mexico. He asked the diplomat to negotiate a peace treaty whenever Mexico wanted to stop fighting. A ceasefire was declared, but attempts to negotiate a peace treaty failed. Santa Anna used the time to prepare for more fighting. So General Scott ended the ceasefire. His men began their attack on Mexico City. The fighting lasted 1 week. Finally, the government of Mexico surrendered and Santa Anna left power. On February 2nd, 1848, the United States and Mexico signed a peace treaty. Mexico agreed to give up California and New Mexico, and Mexico would recognize the Rio Grande as the southern border of Texas. The war was officially over. But historian Robert Mary says President Polk suffered because of the conflict. The war with Mexico, Mary says,
ended up being a much longer war than he had anticipated and much more costly in terms of lives, in terms of money, and in terms of his political standing.
The war with Mexico also influenced the U.S. election in 1848. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us next time for The Making of a Nation, American History, from VOA Learning English.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.